I came over here just before the GFC crashed at home. You could kind of see it happen. It was words like Black Friday and stuff like that, where you could see it starting to dive a little bit. And it got so much worse. I was flying over thinking, trying to stay ahead of the recession, thinking it was coming here. It never came.
No.
It never didn't. Fucking came. Now, I will say one thing. The Aussies probably complained more about the GFC than the Irish did back in Ireland. And it never actually... I was never out of a day's work here. Like, this is a fucking great country.
And how do you stand out when you're just another, you know, guy with a 14-ton?
Get on the fucking phone.
Get on the phone and do what you say. Say what you do.
At the same time, I don't want to be that hungry all my life for this specific thing. Because let's be honest. I can only speak on behalf of myself. It takes a lot away from you. Like, it does take a lot away from your... from your personal life. It's a lonely fucking place. This game. We haven't had, honestly, you know, I'm not here to fucking to talk any bullshit. But yes, there's been problems. Rarely we get an email off our client saying,
alrighty, welcome back to another episode. Today's exciting because I've got a big dog from Sydney down, Colm from Kono Services. If you've been around some big infrastructure jobs in Sydney, you have definitely seen his machines out and about in town. Say hello.
Hello. Thanks, Jimmy. You said you wouldn't call me big dog, but anyway.
We're here now.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
No problem.
Good to be here. A little bit nervous, to be honest. The heart rate is 103.
Heart rate's up. Yeah, so it's first 10 minutes sucks.
Yeah.
Then after that, you get stuck into it. Isn't it strange that we've been sitting here talking 20 minutes and it's been absolutely fine?
Yeah.
I do a little introduction and it goes
and
like
it
this.
It just goes boom.
And it goes like that.
Yeah, you're thinking, fuck, what am I going to say?
Don't look like an idiot. All right, tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey in construction, where you came from and where you're up to now, because that's how the easiest way. All you've got to tell is your story, and by the end of it, you'll feel a whole heap better.
Yeah, Colm Phibbs, Managing Director of Kono Services. We're a bulk excavation civil contractor in New South Wales. We've just opened a branch in Queensland and venturing into other states at the moment. Started off construction, or civil construction, back when I was, you know, left school when I was 13. Jumped into one of my dad's excavators and...
Where at?
In Ireland.
Okay, who'd have thought?
Not Scotland, Ireland.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. Scottish. Okay, so you're in Ireland, and now Irish have a good name as being good operators, so your old boy ran a good operation over there? What did they do?
Yeah, we started off, my old man started off as an agriculture contractor with tractors and baling silage and stuff like that, and then we went into, you know, doing roadways and stuff like that for councils and... Yeah, it was exciting at the time, and we built up a big setup, and it went well, and got to learn a lot, and you know, got to learn the hard way. You know what I mean? Working for the old man, fucking coming home at night and fighting about it over the dinner table. Wake up in the morning fighting about it, but we got through it. It was good. Then came over here to Australia for a year. My brother was over here, so I followed him over, and. He actually went home and I stayed, and then I went home for a year. I didn't really like it here. I wasn't really mad about it. So I went home. Ireland was pretty fucked. The GFC kicked in 2009.
Real hard over there as
Real hard. Like really fucking hard. You know, people that work for companies for 25, 30 years, like big companies, CPB style companies, getting laid off, you know, no job, and a lot of people had to go. We had a lot of Polish and Romanians and Europeans in our country helping us build our economy when our economy was booming, and then it flipped. A lot of these guys, you know, 60 years of age, gone to never probably never left Ireland in their lives, heading to fucking Poland to build roads. And the reality is, we probably weren't very nice to the Polish when they came in. This is my opinion, and I strongly believe we probably weren't the nicest to them. So we were going back over there and getting a taste of our own medicine, you know. There was plenty of, I did hear rumours that there were signs or, you know, ads up where it said Irish need not apply, you know. So it would have been tough. It would have been really, really tough. And it got worse and worse and worse. Like when I came over here just before the GFC crashed at home. You could kind of see it happen. It was words like Black Friday and stuff like that, where you could see it starting to dive a little bit. What was I going up there?
I came over here, yeah, when it just before I crashed, and it got so much worse. Like, it really got went bad for 5-6 years. Sorry, that's what I was going to say. When I came over here, they were I was flying over, thinking, trying to stay ahead of the recession, thinking it was coming here, because it was a GFC, global financial crisis, and it never came.
No,
it never didn't. Fucking came. Now, I will say one thing, the Aussies probably complained more about the GFC than the Irish did back in Ireland, and it never actually, I was never out of a day's work here. Like, this is a fucking great country. This is a really, I always say, I'm always so grateful to have landed in this place, because it's always a day's work. The weather's good, you know, the
even
beaches.
When the weather's bad, it's still good compared, like, I talk to a lot of people from around the world, and, you know, like, about, you know, snow. Like, imagine just, you know, it's Sydney covered in snow, so cold that, like, you know, pipes are freezing and all of this sort of shit. That's what they're dealing with. That's what you would have dealt with in Scotland.
Yeah, in Scotland, yeah. I've never been to Scotland. Ah, sorry, it wasn't Scotland. But, you know, people, the idea is snow. Snow is beautiful when the first blanket of snow comes. And when you pull up the blinds and at 6 o'clock on the first morning and look out, but for fucking 3 weeks after it, there's people crashing cars and sliding off roads and shit like that. But yeah, to be honest with you, Australia, one of the biggest draws for me here is the weather. It's not even the money, or the work and the safety of economy and stuff like that. The weather's a big one.
Mm. So whereabouts in Ireland are you from?
I'm from Southern Ireland, beside Dublin, a place called Wicklow, Blessington, okay. County Wicklow.
There you go. So, never heard of it. No,
you wouldn't have. Nah. It's you would have heard of Dublin, I'm sure.
Of course.
So I'm 20 minutes from Dublin City, 25 minutes from Dublin City. But yeah, came over here and fucking worked for my boss, Westwick Constructions. Shout out to Mark, good man. He's from my hometown as well. Got a visa, a student or a working holiday visa off him, which is a 4-year visa. Then got my residency, and from there, you know, I got the residency, and within probably a couple of months, I had finished up with him, and I jumped around a little bit, went working for this guy, that guy, didn't really know what I wanted to do. I did know what I wanted to do, I just didn't know how to do it.
Mm.
And eventually, I got a work for a 14-ton excavator, and I had no money to buy the fucking thing. I had no money for the deposit. It was 80 grand. It was a Jap import, 80 grand. And I got a loan at $15,000 off a guy. I don't know, washer. Like, I was earning decent money and spending it all, drinking it all and partying. So I never really had any money. So I got this $15,000 anyway, went off, bought this machine, and got it onto a job for 2 weeks' work. And no hammer. I remember rocking up to the site. No hammer. Needed a fucking hammer. Where am I going to get a hammer from? Rang around. No one will deal with you. You know,
No.
Backpacker ringing, looking for a fucking hammer for a machine and paggling down on price and all this. They were hanging up the phone on me. Like, eventually got a company, a smaller, higher company to hire me one. No diesel. I'll never forget it. The first day, I was just so used to driving machines for everyone else. The fuel truck just rocks up. Do you know what I mean? It fills it up and then he fucks off, you know? But when I had my own machine, I remember, oh, fuck, there's diesel in this thing.
You know, when I got my 14-tonner, I had a truck because I built up from 3-ton, 7-ton, 14-ton. I didn't have none of these fuel cells. In fact, it's not like you could even go down and get one of those fuel cells with the fucking selector fuel pump on it or alum lube fuel pump. And so I used to take a jerry can and a gigolo hose and fill up my truck and then drive it to the digger and then gigolo hose out 100 litres a day, you know.
Same.
And like, it was just okay.
Yeah, it worked. Yeah, it worked.
And you didn't have diesel, and then you go, I know what I'll do. I'll go buy some jerry cans at the petrol station.
That's exactly it. And then I upgraded. I managed to get one of the tanks on the back. You know the camera. You know them tanks.
Yeah.
And I had the positive negative up to the battery. Open
the bonnet every day.
The bonnet and proud as punch. Look at my system that I built myself, and I am no way. I'm not good at any of that sort of stuff.
You know that I had one. We used to do that. So a lot of the cars, we tried to put the Anderson plugs on so that they would be able to just flick the switch.
But
we still had some old ones where we where the guys would go around and put it on, and that was okay. Until one day, one of my boys was driving down the freeway. He hadn't closed the bonnet right, and it opened, smashed the windscreen, smashed the roof of the car, ripped off the bonnet over the car. And then you get a phone call, and he's like, "Oh, you know, hey Jimmy, I'm sorry." And you go, "What's happened?" And he's like, "Oh, I've had an accident on the freeway." And he goes, "Oh, I forgot to close the bonnet after I fueled it up." And you go, "That sounds like it's my fault. That's my fault for not." Can everyone confirm in this company that this is actually my fault, because I should have given him everything else. But at the time, I was happy just not to be carrying two jerry cans.
Yeah. You're thinking his new system was flawless until you're nearly right off your ute. Yeah.
I think it did write it off, to be honest. I think by the time it had ripped everything apart and smashed the roof and the pillars or whatever it was, that it was fucked.
Yeah, from there, what did we do? We managed to go on to another job. Like, I always focus so much on the start because it's so fucking hard. Like, there's no real... Trying to find work, I think, is the hardest thing for any person starting out. Like, it's easy to get the finance and, you know, people think these things are hard, but pretty easy to get all that. Trying to get the work. Like, let's be honest. This isn't a new... We're not AI. This is not a new fucking market. Like, there's millions of us. And there's millions of us queuing up to get in. So you have to kind of stand out.
And how do you stand out when you're just another, you know, guy with a 14-ton?
Get on the fucking phone.
Get on the phone and do what you say. Say what you do, you know. Mm. My first job, so I bought the 14-ton. I was going to kill it. So we flew up to Port Macquarie. I bought it specifically because it had like 20 attachments.
All right.
So I'm like, do you know what I'm going to do? I know it's got 9,000 hours on it. But I'm gonna keep it for a year or two, and then I'm gonna fuck it off, and I'm still gonna have these 20 attachments.
Yeah,
killer. Well, I bought it home, proud as punch, parked it in the yard, and then it sat there for 4 months, and I could not find a job. Yeah, could not find a job. I was broke ass. And then I got a phone call on Australia Day saying, "Hi, a 14 tons just." I was at my mate's house just about to crack open a beer. 14 tons just not rocked up. I heard you've got one. Can you bring it down to a job? I could have kissed him. I rocked up. I can remember his name still. Phil, right? Phil, love you, mate. Thanks for calling 15 years ago on Australia Day. You know, and then you just go, yes. And then he said, can you work into the night shift? Yes. Can you come back tomorrow? Absolutely. Yes, you have a job on? And I'm like, not anymore. I've paid for a 14-ton for 4 months with 20 attachments laying on my parents' grass.
Yeah, yeah. It's little things like that, isn't it? It's little breaks. And, you know, at the start, even before I had the machine, I used to be ringing around telling people, yeah, I have a machine, but I didn't have one. Yeah, I've got an excavator and, you know, it's there. You know, it is. It's Komatsu. When you don't have it, I always talk to lads that ring me about buying machines and stuff like that. You kind of just go and buy the fucking thing. Buy it. You know, build it and they will come.
Mm.
But it's hard, obviously, you know, because you, like what happened to you, you have to wait 4 months. You know, it's a long wait, like.
You don't worry too much in the first week, but at about week 10, you start getting a bit itchy.
Yeah, no one likes me. No one wants me, like, yeah.
I say very similar to the people, because I'd have some weeks 10 or 20 people message me about business or whatever it is, and I say the same thing to all of them. Start.
Start.
Yeah. Start. Because if you think that there's a million in a queue waiting with a 14-ton, yeah, there is, but there's 20 million saying that they're going to buy one.
Yeah, talking about it, yeah. Yeah, you got to just go for it. You got to just buy the machine and have to sacrifice that there's potential, that there could be a six-month wait there. But I do know one thing, is the longer that fucking wait goes on, the more you're going to pick up that fucking phone, the more desperate you're going to get. Starving. Gift of desperation, you know what I mean? If you're desperate, you know, you don't mind driving onto sites and knocking on doors and opening up the fucking yellow pages and going for it. And eventually something will kick.
So then from one 14-ton, what happened? So you've gotten your hammer and you've figured out your diesel now. You're a big man with a ute and a pump.
Yeah, got the pump and the ute. And yeah, got onto another job. And I was lucky. I got onto another job. I was there for a week. The supervisor on the job, great man, but he was an absolute fucking prick. He was a prick, and he knew my situation. He knew that I needed this job, and he fucking played on it big time. But I didn't mind.
Of course.
I didn't mind.
So happy for it.
Happy. do what you want. Yeah. Beat the shit out of me every day. I don't care. Just give me work. Bring me back. And I was meant to, the client was actually bringing in their own excavator. They had a 14 tonner as well. And they're bringing in their own excavator in 2 weeks. And fuck me, did I work hard for that 2 weeks. Because I knew, like, there was no chance. My machine was there for 2 weeks and their machine was coming in. And that's what was happening. But it was the only hope I had. So I worked my ass off. To be honest with you, I probably did very little machine driving in them 2 weeks. I was just out on the ground running around. Anything he wanted, you know, just going to the shop, getting him coffee, fucking doing whatever I could, fucking on the shovel, you know, pushing labourers, doing everything I could. So trying to give him the idea that you need me on this job. Lo and behold, the boat machines ended up staying, and I actually think their machine might have left before mine did. And it was,
how long were you there?
I was there for 8-9 months,
you know.
Savior.
Oh, absolutely.
However, the problem with that is you're in there for 8 or 9 months,
you're not hungry no more, chasing the phone calls.
Yeah, well, you're busy as well, because, you know, this at the same, it was never like, oh, 2 years are here now, you're going to stay here forever. That the foreman knew, it was always keep going, because you're not meant to be here. You know, you're outside the budget here. So not only was I not ringing around, like, this guy was hard, like, he was an Arab guy, like, he pushed it. Best supervisor I ever worked for, but he fucking pushed hard. So there was no time for phone calls or, hey, I'm just going to ring someone else and see, can I get more work? There was none of that carry on. So not to talk about the problems, but that job ended. And yeah, in between that job, I managed to buy a little 1.7 tonner, or 3 tonner, sorry. And I actually did get a second client on that job, a piling company, that I managed to get a 25 tonner in with them.
Yeah, but I've heard you've got a 3 ton and a 15 ton. You haven't got a 25 ton at that stage?
No, I had the 14 tonner and then they got to 3.5. And the 3.5 was just dry hire, fucking around the site, you know, whatever. I was getting $1,000 a week for it. You know, it was brilliant. I was, you know, after making it, I've got this, and now, you know, there's a nice feeling.
Diverse.
Yeah, there's a nice feeling for me anyway in having a machine. Yes, I was working on this one and I had to be on that one, but to have something there that I didn't have a whole lot to do with and I was making a few quid off it, I like that feeling, yeah. You know? And on that job, a piling company came on and I just got into their ear, and as it turned out, the guy they were using actually set up his own piling company. So I was just, you know.
You were in at the right time.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. I went and bought the fucking 25-ton excavator, could not get finance for it. Finance company I was getting stuff off refused me. And I had the machine, bought secondhand, 4,000 hours, PC228. Had the machine on the job, told your man, yeah, I'll pay you. It's coming. Got the phone call off the finance company.
Fuck.
Yeah, we can't do this one. We'll get you on the next one, yeah?
We're in a bit of a pickle. As you're watching the 20-ton spin around and you're like, yeah.
As I'm on the phone to your man saying, yeah, it's coming tomorrow. The money's coming tomorrow.
Might just take a minute here.
Yeah, but I end up reaching out to another finance company. I'm still with that finance company today, and they got it over the line.
Isn't that interesting? Still with them today. So they helped Kono at what, machine number 5? Or let's say something around there.
Machine number 3, actually.
3?
3, yeah.
How many machines would have you bought since then?
Oh, we've got over 120 excavators.
But that's only right now. How many have you cycled through? And they've been, they've been part of every, you know, step of the way.
And hammers, utes, saws, you know, all that, attachments and stuff like that. Yeah, no, he's done well over. But
he's got at least a holiday house. From it.
Yeah, he doesn't say that. He plays it down all the time. But
you know, I only changed 2 years ago. And I'll tell you the story quickly, because public liability, driving my truck one day, someone's like, hey, can you send me a certificate of your public liability? You know, you got your machine on site. And I'm like, you what? Public what? And they're like, public liability, you got to have it. I'm like, what is it? And they're like, well, I need a certificate for $5 million. I'm like, $5 million fucking dollars? You've got to be kidding.
I don't have $5 million.
I've barely got a diesel pump on my car. And so anyway, I started ringing around. I was 20 and I started ringing these insurance companies. I'm like, hi, I need this. And no one's ringing me back. Not one person's ringing me back.
Right.
Then one guy rung me back. and I stuck with him for 15 years from his brokerage firm turning from, you know, fairly small into a substantial brokerage firm, plus all of my subbies who needed insurance, they go to him. All of my friends who start a company, this is your guy. And then I rang him up. Oh, well, actually, we tried to insure a car through him, and he goes, no, we don't insure those cars. And I'm like, no, you do. Like, don't get me wrong, it sounds expensive, but it was just an old car, right? I bought a nice old car. And he's like, no, we don't insure old cars. And I'm like, oh, you do. It's my car. Like, oh, I finally bought an older car that I wanted, but you should insure it. And he's like, no. I'm like, you don't insure that now. You pick and choose only which ones you do. Huh?
Yeah.
He's like, well, you can call up and find someone else. So I called up someone and said, I want to insure this car, and I've also got however many assets that I want to insure as well. What sort of deal? And they go, don't worry, we'll cover that one. Bring over all of your stuff. And I went, yeah, okay. I even rung him and said, are you certain you do not want to insure this car? Because you can't really pick. If your client rings up and says, hi, we need a 30-ton, and you go, I don't really want to send that 30-ton. Do you ever say no?
Never.
Do you say, oh, no, we don't do 30 tons?
If you asked me to go out and cut your lawn after this podcast, there was enough money in it, I'd be gone doing it. Like, I'd never say fucking no. Like, it was a policy I had at the start. Don't ever fucking say no. Never. No. When they ring looking for machines that were like, a lot of machines we hire out are machines that we don't have. But just never say no, because like what happens with your insurance guy is the last thing you want is them picking up the phone and making a connection with someone else. Now, I'm not saying you like it happens, but you definitely don't want to be the one encouraging it. Like that insurance guy.
Of course, imagine your finance dude said when you got a 375, don't you, bulldozer, or a 275 or something. Probably got every one of the model all the way up, don't you?
Yeah, we have a 375 and 275.
Yeah. So imagine you rung up and said, hey, listen, I want you to finance $1 million bulldozer. And he goes, oh, sorry, no, we don't finance bulldozers. You go, what? No, you do. You do for me. All of those deals and all of those stuff.
And
you know?
Not just a bulldozer. Like you ringing up to say, and I'm sure that in that situation, from what I could see happen, he doesn't insure older cars. There's a different company that does it. You just go and ring that other company. This is a one-off. Do you know what I mean?
It's like a 40 grand car, 30 grand car. It's not an expensive car. Because he said, right, ring up Shannon's and do it. And I'm like, Shannon's, I don't ring Shannon's.
You ring Shannon's. Yeah.
And then he could have made $1,000 for the phone call.
Yeah.
He could have said, he's like, oh, no, we can't do it because we're not a brokerage for Shannon's. I said, then call yourself Jimmy Starbuck, mate. I said, you've known me 15 years. I said, you've insured my life, my everything.
And did he chase you after it?
Yeah, he's rung. Do you know what he did? He rung back after he pulled the policy. So they have to send some notice that says that they're pulling all of the policies over. He rung up and said, I didn't realise that car was so important to you. I said, excuse me? Yeah. He goes, I'll do it. He's like, I'll do it for you now. I'm like, what? What do you mean you'll do it now? It's like,
it's too late.
I wanted someone to do it. And then, but they came to me and they go, well, what else do you insure? We'll put together a package. And I'm like, well, I insure a little bit actually now that you mention it. Why don't I provide you a list? I'll just call my team. It's and that's, I think, something that gets when you're comfortable too. You know, you said yes for a decade. The word no never came out of your mouth. And I think you'd find if you followed Kono around the sites now, some people would be saying, oh, nah, that's not in our scope of works.
Yeah, not even that, you know. Like, and in fairness to our team, like the senior managers, they are, you know, I'd be drilling into them, never say no, never say no. But, you know, it's a tricky one. Like, saying yes all the time, it is fucking draining.
And not only that, it's dangerous.
It's dangerous, you know, and you know, if you can find your place in the market, and like I still don't like saying no, but you know, it is draining. Like, you know, these businesses, like they, you know, trying to do what you're good at is fucking hard enough. And then when you're trying to like get a call there, we're trying to get into the Queensland market, and someone gave us a call about looking for AI fucking dumpers to drive themselves. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, yeah. But, like, you know, when you sit back, like, what the fuck? Like, where are we going to get them? You can't ring, you know, Komatsu Hire. Coach Hire looking for, give me 6 AI driver dumpers. Like, you know, things like that. Right. Obviously, that was a major no, but even smaller things, I think.
I have, so I haven't even probably thought about it as much, but we've got a bit going on in Queensland, but I'm just not that hungry is the other part. And it's like that hunger that you're talking about when, you know, your machine's sitting and you've only got 1 week in front of you and repayments and everything else and you are starving.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, yeah, I'll call that guy tomorrow about that job. I called non-stop, emailed, like you needed something, I was putting it together and now up in Queensland I'm like.
That's just a sign you got too much money.
No, I'm not kind of. So we'll get back.
Edit that out, will you?
Nah, never. I'm poor. I'm selling myself on a podcast. What are you talking about?
No, I get it. I get the hunger thing, you know, and it kills me that it's you know, I suppose all you can do is at the same time, I don't want to be that hungry all my life for this specific thing because let's be honest. I can only speak on behalf of myself. It takes a lot away from you. Like it does take a lot away from your personal life and, you know, your friendships and stuff like that. Like a lot of my friends have come work for me and some of them have left and I don't talk to them anymore. And
it breaks your heart.
It breaks your fucking heart. Yeah, and really not only that, it's a lonely fucking place. This game. Like I'm not, I know we're not, you know, we're doing a fairly old industry. There's nothing sexy about it. But at the same time, there's a lot of challenges that go on, a lot of stuff, you know, like just friends coming on board. Most of my friends work for me. And it just, even though the ones most of them are still there, it just changes.
It does.
It does change. Like the barbecues and the weekends and stuff like that, it's just different, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because, and like, you know, more often than not, you know, I could finish up on a Friday at 5 o'clock or whatever time it is and my phone mightn't ring for the whole weekend, you know? Now, I'm not saying I want it to ring either because I'm not there either, you know? I'm burnt out, I'm fucking...
Yeah, and you're 50% of the friendship as well, but it is. Me and you have spoken about it a little bit over the time. It does get to be... isolating, you know,
yeah,
a little bit, but we also isolate ourselves a little bit, also
100%. You know, that's exactly right. You know what I mean? The phone would ring, and I'm just not, you know,
I'm drained of the day,
yeah, but then I'd be whinging to the missus going, I have no fucking friends, you know, what the fuck is wrong?
I don't know what's wrong with
me. Yeah, do people not like me?
Like my brother calls, you know, yeah. And you go, like, I love you with all of my heart, and if you need me, I'm there. Just not at the minute.
Just not at the
minute. You know, I went motorbike riding yesterday and he called me on the way home to find out how I was. Now, I was tired. And so I'm like, I'll miss that one and call him back. It's on my list to do today. Mm. It happens.
And when I'm talking about it taking stuff from me, it takes that shit from me. Like your brother probably wanted to ring you there for a chat, tell you how you went on bike riding. And, you know, you don't have the time or the interest or whatever it is. Or
both sides are okay. And I've rung him a lot too.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the world goes round. But I want to dive in just a little bit to people working for you because I know that your friends and your family working for you because that's what ends up happening. They end up seeing Kono going well.
Mm.
You know, you've gone from one machine, an old, you know, import model to now you have a new gear, big jobs, and you need help. They have the ability to help. It's just a match made in heaven at the start.
Family, yeah.
Yeah, family, all good mates, you know, or whatever else. And then you sit down and you go, yeah. But I had, everyone knows I had my best friend work for me for 5 years and then he left and went to work for someone else, and it's hard.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny, and we've had this conversation before. Like, I had a not technically a business partner, but basically a business partner, and a
your right hand man,
right hand man.
Yeah,
and I was his right hand man.
Mm.
You know, we're like two peas in a pod. You know, and he just wanted to. He just wanted to move on from the business. You know, I was blindsided by this. You know, I couldn't believe it, and. It happened in the space of, it was mentioned, you know, 1 month and 2 months later, it was all over, you know, and the first 6 weeks, it was just, we didn't speak about it. And then all of a sudden it was gone, you know, and, you know.
And it hurts, you
know. Oh, it fucking does, man. It's like, and I've talked to a few people, but I've talked to you about it as well. Like you're one of the first people I actually called. And, you know, the reality was the business itself, actually wasn't, when you lose any senior manager, heaps of them out here, if you lose any of them, there's a hole that needs to be pulled. Yeah. we've a bit of depth in our company now. You know, we're going 11 years. A lot of people are with me 6, 7, 8 years now. So when one steps down, there's another one waiting there to go. Like, yeah, that's the system.
In fact, they want to go.
They want it, which is great. So in terms of business and how the business ran, it wasn't that bad. Myself and my business partner, I kind of take a, if I was to be honest, I'd kind of maybe taken 2 steps back, and he'd probably taken a step back, and the others were running the business. We were doing a bit of a development and stuff like that. So in terms of that, the business actually went perfectly. And everyone reassured me saying, listen, I don't know what you think is going to happen here, because this is what we've been doing for the last 2 years. It was the fucking, like losing a brother. Do you know what I mean? It was that, you know, that first phone call in the morning. That 20 phone calls throughout the day.
Yeah.
You know, and don't get me wrong, I wish, I still love that person, you know what I mean? And I always will. And I was very lucky to have what I got. We had 10 years together, 7 years together. You know, I've heard a couple of quotes saying you can't control the end, but at the same time, it happened. And I don't mean the end happened.
No, the whole thing.
The whole fucking thing happened.
A whole lot.
You know, if someone came to me 10 years ago and say, listen, this is what you're going to get, and this is the, you know, you take the hand off.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So, best of luck and wish them well. But unfortunately, the relationship does crack.
Of course. Of course, the barbecues aren't the same. In fact, they might not even be going anymore. And, you know, the catch-ups, while they might stay at the start, they sort of stop.
Yeah, they dwindle because, you know, going into the same industry, obviously, and you know, we're all, let's be honest, in this game, we all have to be a little bit sneaky. We all have to play our cards close to our chest. And you know, it's you know, I believe I have a good relationship with you because we're in 2 different states.
Yeah.
And we can talk about this shit, you know, the shit that goes on. But, you know, you come up to fucking New South Wales and start hiring up 100 machines, the relationship changes.
If they're not Kono and the Boom, there's going to be a relationship change. And that's okay.
That's okay. Yeah, that's okay.
Not saying it is a bad thing. And I think that people often don't talk about it, don't think about it or anything else like that. Like, it's absolutely fine for these things. Like you said, you know, if someone came to you and said, listen, your guy is going to be with you 8 years and then he's going to go out and take a different opportunity. You go, hell yeah, 8 years.
If someone came to me now and said, right, I don't know who, would have to be some sort of god, would come now and said, right, this is the offer. I'm going to give you 8 years, and this is what's potentially going to happen. Can't tell you what's going to happen at the end. Do you want it?
Sorry for interrupting this episode. I may as well do my own ads on here rather than just having YouTube ads. ConExpo has its last discount code up now. It's going to last all the way to the expo. It's Starbucks20, and get you 20% off of your tickets. So don't buy them at full price. Look forward to seeing you all there. Thanks. So we didn't finish off because I want to talk to you about the story of because you've got 3 machines.
Yep.
Where to from there? Because you've landed in, I reckon we should put up, Louis, a couple of pictures of some of the holes that you guys have done and been part of. They have been some of the most impressive that have gone on in, I would say, in the Australian infrastructure space, you know?
Yeah.
You dug, you know, some of what was the big ones, like a few 100,000 cubic metres solid of rock, 20 metres, 30 metres deep.
Just to go back, I won't go back to every fucking machine we bought. And we bought the 4th machine, and then this happened, and then we got the 5th one. But we were doing a lot of work for builders and a lot of work for a big kind of a tier 2 infrastructure, tier 3 or civil company in Sydney. And they helped me, they kept me going for till I had about 10, 11, 12 machines. I was on a job in North Sydney, and I remember looking across the road and seeing this big old middle of North Sydney. North Sydney's pretty dense. Mm-hmm. Big massive open site with nothing on it. And I remember looking and going, what the fuck's going on there? Someone said, oh, some train station or some metro or something like that. And I thought, all right, never thought much more about it. We were working on this job, sawing, hammering, the whole lot. Coincidentally, a superintendent, I didn't even know what a superintendent was, because in our game we're working foremen, supervisors. Superintendent pops his head into the hole we're digging and says, who's sawing the rock on that job? And the supervisor gave him my number. Yeah.
Hi.
Howdy. A Kiwi guy rang me and said, hey, would you be interested in coming in for a chat? And I'm like, fucking out I am. I'll be straight in. Went in, sat down with them. They told me what they wanted to do. The guys they had on site weren't really performing is what they said. And would we be able to help? So with that, give me this much fucking paperwork. I said, here, fill that out. And I thought, lovely, I'll fill this out. I'll go back and we'll just put everything in. Now I'm talking about going back to the office. We went back to the office and I think I might have one girl in the office helping me. So it was a challenge just to get that filled out, sent it back. And then we got approved, you know, the tick of approval to say you're compliant. Of course, I didn't know what that meant. I thought that meant, I'm in. We're compliant. Now, in fairness, it's half the battle to get. You've already made the relationship. They've already given you the welcome pack or whatever you want to call it. And you get that approved. So I'm sitting back then waiting for this call to come. And then I rang them and said, hey, I haven't heard anything. I said, yeah, you haven't got a contract. Oh, for fuck's sake, how do I get a contract? So I had to go through that process. And long story short, got the contract. And that was it. That was it. Straight into the infrastructure boom in Sydney. Unbeknownst to myself, went in. I'll tell you what it was that actually got us in. They were looking for something, besides that they needed someone to help, they wanted someone to do some horizontal sawing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I get mixed up with horizontal and vertical sawing, so I didn't really know what they meant. So I was like, yeah, no, we can do that. You know, yeah, horizontal, yeah, that's straight, isn't it? But it was cutting into the wall. Hmm. They wanted to make a, I can't remember what they wanted. They wanted to flatten off a surface. And the wall's coming up here. They wanted to flatten that off. So I think, right, how are we going to do this?
Oh, fuck. No yeah. one can actually horizontal saw.
But we did. We managed to make it a fitting and a part in our, and we must have got someone to make it for us. And here we were in with this, never used to before. All the safety guys are all on top of us and here we are. No, this is how it goes. And that's what got us in.
How does the guarding work? Because it'd have to be some fairly impressive guarding on it, because the saw would be at like,
well, you have the saw only covers 90%, it covers 50% of the saw. The guards, so you're just going straight in, straight out. You're not trying to do the gliding along the wall. You know, you're straight in, straight out. Move up, straight in, straight out.
Yep.
And they loved it. Well, not that they loved it, it worked. It did what they wanted them to do. And that was kind of my way in. Oh, we're the horizontal saw guys, you know, and it turned out they needed it done on another job. And then I just start pushing the saw man. I used to say the saw man. I don't know where I was doing it, but I think I must have been doing it on LinkedIn or Instagram or something. But people, I just got a name for being a saw guy in Sydney. And, you know, I'm not sure. Well, you've probably never seen me on a saw.
No.
Like, I'm probably the worst guy in the country to go on a saw. Like, my walls are fucking embarrassing. But I managed to get guys on it, and I found out that, when I was used to be driving machines in them holes for that company I work for, you know, the sawman was the king. You know, they don't talk to him, or, you know, not literally, but, you know, he was a man on the job. You know, he used the saw, like, it was kind of that role, and no one else could use the saw. Don't look at the saw, clean the saw. You can clean the saw if you want. This sort of carry on, you know. And it was this kind of thing that, you know, if you wanted a saw, you had to go to this guy. And I just brought a couple of Irish lads and that were tidy operators. A couple of them might have been ex-chippies or something like that. They have that little bit of a ness about them. Mm. You know, they might have been a farmer back home, went and done their apprenticeship. But they learned how to drive machines over the years, and they just start driving machines. Guys like that, that had that grunt about them, but they had that little bit of a ness. You know, 5 mil mm-hmm. was a big deal to them. Whereas me, I'm 200 mil.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it within 200? Yeah, it's all right.
I'm good. Within, yeah. Up or down. Yes, 200. Yeah, yeah. I'm not talking within.
So, you know, I got lads on, and our operations manager now actually was, he's a top class saw man. Like, never really used the saw, and he picked it up, and we just became these saw guys. So I think I own 40 or 50 saws in our yard now. Not a lot of them aren't working right now, but at the time, every one of them was working. We could not buy them quick enough.
Really?
Yeah, we could not buy them quick enough. And you know yourself, if you've got that attachment on the end of the excavator, you know, it turns your $110 an hour into, you know, close to double.
Uh-huh. And not only that, the amount of fuel you're using, the amount of wear and tear. Now, saws are a bit different. They can cause a bit of wear and tear. But overall, it's better with machines that have attachments clipped on the end of it.
Yeah, and the saw doesn't ring you on Monday and say, here, listen, I'm going to take today off. like the machine operator. Yeah,
it doesn't call in sick.
Yeah, it doesn't have feelings, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't ring you and I'm after having to fight with the missus, and is there anything I can do here, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, the figuring out the, in my opinion, the best way to make money out of excavators is attachments. You know, especially them early days. I was working my first machine. I was getting $110 an hour for my 14 ton excavator, which was decent money at the time. The company I worked for was very fair. And yeah, but when you got that attachment on, that's when you could start not making massive money, because your saw blades, you're making massive money and then you need to buy saw blades. Saw blades, $7,000. Do you know what I mean? So you know how business goes. You think you're making money, and then
you have to buy a saw blade.
You need to buy a saw blade.
And then next week someone snaps it, and then you have to go buy another one.
Yeah, or you're paying to get teeth done on it and redo it, and fucking it's bent, and you put teeth on it, but the saw blade was bent anyway. The saw was warped. You know, all that sort of shit. But you've got more money to play with.
100%.
You know. So yeah, infrastructure, and then we just start getting into, you know, getting bigger and bigger in that space, and you know, eventually towards the middle to the end of it, we pretty much excavated most of the boxes on the Sydney Metro line. Mm-hmm. Not most, we probably done 50% of them from start to finish. The excavation only, some under the client's control and some under our own control, and yeah, it was a turning point. It was getting into that infrastructure space. Was a turning point for my business. I work for, I'm 12, this is my 13th year in business. For the first 10 years, man, I didn't have a pot to piss in.
Yep.
I did not have a pot to piss in. You know, it was, yes, there was money coming in, and if someone looked at it, someone that had brains looked at it, would say, oh, well, you were making money, you were just pumping it back in, this, that, and the other. But, you know, myself and my wife, we didn't have money to buy a house, and didn't have money to go on a holiday, and let alone you couldn't go on a holiday because the fucking phone just never fucking stopped.
The phones are what kills it now. I often have conversations with an older generation of businessmen who didn't have to deal with a mobile phone following them everywhere, because you have an immediate avenue for someone who can answer the question, and you don't have to think, sort of thing. So you just, you find people constantly ringing it. Like, I have truck drivers ring my office now in the morning, and they're like, the operator on site hasn't called me in on the radio. And you go, have you looked, are you at the site? And they go, yes. And you go, any chance you can get out and walk over to the excavator? And like, depending on what sort of site it is or whatever, can you just walk over and say hello? Oh, yeah, but I thought you'd want to call. Yeah. No.
I think there's something different going on there. I think some people like to ring Jimmy Starbuck. And I don't mean that in any, some people like to ring the boss.
Yeah.
And like, you know, not to say that guy was doing that, but, you know, to make themselves look better. Sometimes the best way to make yourself look better is throw someone else under the bus.
Yeah, your excavator operator hasn't called me.
Yeah, he fucked me. He's after fucking me. I'm waving at him here. Yeah.
So tell me about some of your big jobs. Tell me about one or two of your big jobs, because you've had, like I'd mentioned before, you'd had some impressive ones.
Yeah, some of the station boxes we were excavating were, you know, up to 200 metres long, you know, 26, 7 metres wide, so they're narrow. And up to 25 metres deep. A couple of shafts that we've done, you know, 40 metres deep. You know, you're talking about putting the team is the most important thing on a job like that. You know, you need a really solid supervisor. Like few and far between type of supervisor. And he needs to be, you know, fully invested in the job. You're talking about the supervisors, the ones what we're doing, they're not standing at the top of the hole on a fucking radio going, do this, do that. They're in the fucking hole, up, down. I've done it myself, and I have to be honest, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of it, it's draining. Like, I often look at some of our supervisors and think, how the fuck do you do that? And they're in at 4 o'clock in the morning, they're finished at 6 in the evening, and then it's Sunday, Saturdays. But so solid supervisor, and a really important role is the labourer in the hole as well, or two labourers, you know, because it's not for anyone.
It's not easy.
Dragging chains and fucking pumping out water and lifting this on top of that and trying to climb down here. You know, unfortunately, operators being operators don't have much compassion for them, you know. Like,
no, there's definitely
beeping
not.
And, you know, giving out and this, that, and the other, you know, and they're changing hoses for, you know, trying to change a 50-ton hammer. Mm-hmm. In the bottom of one of them basements, and it's shit everywhere, and the fucking hole, you can barely carry the hose, and trying to get the, you know, the labourers are in doing that sort of stuff. So operator, supervisor, and then clatter of solid good operators.
Yeah.
And just, you know, hammer men. Everyone thinks they know how to use a hammer.
No, no one knows how to use a hammer. Yeah. Really. When you and see can't good, they cost you some money? Don't you just throw it in the bin?
Yeah. A good hammer man is worth his weight in gold. Like it's a skill in itself. And, you know, some people think because they've hammered up a couple of footpaths, you know, over in Ireland, in the back end of fucking Ireland somewhere, they hammered up a footpath for their father. You know, they're hammer men. And you come over here, and in fairness, you know, you see some solid Aussie hammer men. You learn so much off them. They just know where to hit that rock. And yeah, man, it's not rocket science doing them holes. It's not. Well, for us, it's not anyway. But there's a lot of safety. There's a lot of compliance. There's a lot of pushing. I've always found the clients on big jobs like that, like all the tier ones in Sydney, you know, the Asianas, the CPBs, the Langerorks, the Gamudas, the Weebills, I find them quite fair.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had, and I don't know if I'm lucky, I hear people giving out about them. And yes, there's arguments and there's this, you know, there's all sorts to go on.
Have you mostly hit your programs though? Mostly?
Nah.
Kind of. Because that's where I find that the people who have told me they have gotten into some arguments with them, that's where it comes, that's where it gets pointy, you know.
We haven't had, honestly, you know, I'm not here to fucking to talk any bullshit, but yes, there's been problems. I've had them problems with builders, with certain builders. Now, I've got good relationships with a lot of builders in Sydney, but with certain builders, I have had them programs, them. But it's rarely we get an email off our client saying, referencing 17.64A on the contract.
Yeah, very rarely for us too.
Yeah.
And if they are sending that, they're not the people we want to work for.
100%.
I don't know. Like, they've got, you know, all of those names you mentioned, they've got an office full of lawyers. They've probably got a whole floor of lawyers. And if they're going to be utilising the contract to bash me with, I just want to dig the hole or truck the dirt, yeah? Like, you know, you order 25 trucks, I want to send them to you.
Yeah, okay? Yeah, yeah. And if there's a problem, pick up the fucking phone and we'll
yeah.
You know, and if you need to fuck me out of it, by all means, go for it. And I'll take it on and I'll do something about it. I'm not just saying, oh yeah, you can release your anger on me, like, open, transparent. Like, I've had more arguments with project managers, engineers over the years, but every one of them at the end of the day, we shake hands and move on, you know? Yep. So in that sense, the contract doesn't, and yes, it's been mentioned a couple of times, you know, it's been dangled out. Say, oh, what's, you know?
Yeah, there's a stick here.
Yeah, yeah. I have the Bible. Do you want to go against the Bible? But yeah, it's, you know, it was crazy. We're still doing it at the moment. You know, we three or four of them boxes on at any given time, and yeah, it was good. Now it's the issue in New South Wales at the moment is a lot of that work is starting to dry up a little bit.
That's what we've had down here. Those level crossings. There was a time when I think I've tried to put it together, so I've had some numbers, but I think there was a time when I was on like in between 10 and 15 at once.
Yeah, wow.
Between some might have 20, 30 guys on them, some might only have two guys or one guy, or, you know, like but they all had a different capacity of, okay, that's only one or two or five this
What's
week.
A level crossing, sorry?
Where the boom gates that came down, they either put the rail line underneath the road or they put the rail line above the road.
Oh, they done away with the gates?
Yeah, did away with the gates.
Okay, that would be massive.
They did 50 in 7 years, but then they decided it worked so well that they did another 25 and then they did another 15 or something. But some of them were huge digs, yeah?
Like, in the middle of the city, obviously.
In the middle of the city. Yeah, where I know that one of them was like 6 million cubic.
Wow. Oh, I think you meant $6 million. Yeah. 6 million cube.
Yeah, 5-6 million cube was one. A trench that was like 4 kilometres long or something.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Like fucking ridiculous. Yeah, I think I've
seen
numbers.
Pictures on. A couple of years ago or?
Oh, yeah, a few years ago now. The big ones that they did because they would connect it. So it would be one rail line running down and they'd have boom gate, boom gate, boom gate, boom gate, boom gate. So they said, right, if we drop it down here and we exit it out over here for 3-4 kilometres long, we'll actually do 6 of our 50.
And were they tunneling them or hammering them out or what?
There was hammers, no tunnels.
TBMs, no TBMs.
No TBMs, all open cut.
Open cut, right.
All open cut trenches or flyover bridges.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
There was one, but like one project, I think it was C to D, Caulfield to Dandenong was 9 stations or something. 9 stations in the air. I think it cost like $3-4 billion for that one.
Yeah, wow.
And so we were just on them everywhere. Well, they've mostly closed now. There's only a couple going on in Melbourne. We're still hauling out from one. But if there was 15 going at one time and now there's only two or three, you're in a bit of shit.
Yeah, you have to diversify, you know. That's why I don't like focusing too much on bulk excavation. We have a civil division and we have a major plant hire division that we kind of, you know, the bulk X, you get caught up in it. It's let's be honest, it's a bit more fun. It's a bit more, people find a bit more, especially on social media, people find a bit more interacting, you know, mm-hmm. big machines and big hole, deep holes and stuff like that. But, you know, we need to, well, we are at the moment, we're diversifying, we're doing a major civil job on the second part of the metro. So what happened with them metros in Sydney is they bring in a tier one to do the excavation, a TSE, they call it, tunnel shaft excavation.
Mm-hmm.
So you get two or three major tier ones to do that. And then after that, they bring in another tier one company to build the station. So we're currently on the second phase of it now, doing the civil works, a lot of plant hire and stuff like that.
How do you go with that?
Yeah, good, because, you know, like we've always maintained, I started off as a plant hire business and then wanted to get into a bit of contract work. And we've always dabbled in both. We're, you know, when we'd be going into price a job with a client, and I always find people ask, you know, what how do you differentiate from other subbies? And I don't know how we do. I genuinely don't. But one thing I always noticed when we went into them, we were always open to, we can do it on rates or we can do it on contract. And it's not, we actually have a separate contract, a separate plant hire division. They don't really interact with the contract division. So it is two separates. It's not just a contract company trying to do a bit of plant hire, because it is different. You know
it
what I mean?
Different.
You need fitters. You need to, downtime is major. You can't cover up as much in the plant hire. With the contract, you can, you know, you can sneak in L, you can put your...
There's a different sort of contingency that you have in contract, because as long as you're hitting those numbers and the dirt's going out the gate, however it's going out the gate, is sort of a little bit master of your own destiny.
Yes, exactly. You know?
Rather of, why is that 14 ton not working today? Your operator called in sick, but I need another one. Who's inducted and as good as Daryl was, even though Daryl's been here a year and a half. And you go, fuck, I haven't got another Daryl.
I only have two Daryls.
Yeah, and you've got one here and one's at home.
Yeah, we always, you know, tried to do the dance with the, you know, help them out, to give the smarts, use our estimators to price jobs and all this. And then they would make the decision towards the end. And sometimes, I don't know, sometimes I feel like that kind of worked for us. They wanted to take control, or they wanted to go, you guys do it. But... yeah, what was it going on about there?
No, I can't remember, but I liked it. Whatever it was, we got on to Daryl. Oh, because we end up doing the same thing as well. Like I say, I don't care how you want me to price it, per ton, per cube, per day, per hour.
Yeah.
You know, I'm probably getting a little bit iffy at a week rate, but sure, week rate too.
Yeah. I'll work it out. It's almost like they want to catch you out. Oh, no, you want to do it? You want to do contract? Yeah, okay, let's do plant hire. I'm like, yeah, okay. Oh, you want to do plant hire? Okay, we're going to do contract. We don't mind.
I really don't mind either, because there's a value in both for us.
And another thing on top of that, our plant hire side is, you know, we're not just dropping machines and fucking off. You know, there is an element of, and if the client wants an operator switched for whatever reason that may be, that doesn't suit or whatever, you know, we're on top of it. I get this kind of a bit of a perception, particularly when I get into the start, there was machines being dropped onto jobs and it was just all care, no responsibility, and they were gone. Now, I'm not saying we get, you know, we'll get as involved as they want us to get involved. Mm. Like, we're on a job at the moment in the city and they don't want us involved. They don't want us involved at all. I don't even think I'm inducted on the job. And I think when you ring to get inducted, they're like, what do you want to get inducted for? It's like, oh, well, I want to come in and show you how it's done. And they're like, no, we don't want you here. You know, which is music to my ears, but...
really funny. We did a big job on the weekend and they used my trucks and we had about half the machines on site. I think we had like six or eight of the machines on site. And they said, right, we want... you to be all over the top of the trucks. We need your trucks, supervisors, trucking captains. We need like the daily dockets over the weekend of 12 hours. It ran 24. You know, we need you to open up the office, provide all of the paperwork in real time for all of the bullshit that we're doing. Okay, no problem. And then we're like, right, what are we going to do with the diggers? We'll give a labourer for the machines. No, we've got that. And you go, okay, we'll have like a leading hand or a foreman there to like look after it. No, just operators, please. And you go, you want all of this on-site people, on-site personnel, manager who's has to have gone to site. They got my second in charge out there for the trucks, but for the diggers, nothing. Yeah. We've got this, yeah. But you've got that. And that was really quite interesting to see.
Did it work for them?
Yeah, I believe it did.
Yeah.
I believe it did. I think that in the trucking part, because there was so much, you know, different quarries and, you know, different products going in and out.
Yeah, they needed help. Yeah.
They wanted us over the top of that. And then also it was hourly hire. So they wanted all of it outsourced, the chasing of it. They just wanted to ring up and say, where's our trucks? We haven't had a truck in 3 minutes. Where's our next one?
I think a lot of the, you know, you have to remember these people for the you know, the CPBs, the John Hollands and that. You know, they've got a team there and they want to, you know, they're passionate. Like you meet some of the most passionate people about building, you know, 100%. Civil jobs, and they want control. Do you know what I mean? But the younger guys coming through, they're like, no, we don't want your fucking help here. We've got a plan here. I'm an engineer. I've fucking studied for 6 years. We don't want to smash and grab or whatever it may be. We've got a plan here. And in fairness to that job that we're doing in the city now, I've never actually seen a job going as well. They're absolutely pumping it.
Really?
Yeah, and we've no major involvement in it whatsoever.
It's very interesting, though, because, you know, some they fall apart and you look at it and you go, this is the shittest job that has ever been ran. Yeah. You know, like, you obviously have no idea. And then others, you're like, poor, it turns out I don't have any idea. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't have dug this way or I wouldn't have done that. And then, but looking at you, maybe I should think about it.
Yeah. And you want to kind of, you want to ring them and say, yeah, how the fuck did you do that?
Is there any chance that you're putting on some sort of night class? Because, but it must just be the amount of effort that people are putting in, because it's so strange to see some jobs running so far over in time and, you know, money, and then there's other jobs absolutely killing it from the ground perspective. I think that they all run over if you read the newspaper, though, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, from the ground perspective, some jobs are ran like an absolute Swiss watch.
No, there's definitely a difference between a good, like, the longer I've kind of got into this business, I'm like, you know, I've listened to a couple of your podcasts and you'll be asking people about, I'm going to go on a tangent here and I'm probably going to forget what I'm talking about. But, you know, the difference between a good team and a bad team, or a good team and an okay team, don't want to say the word bad, but is unbelievable, mm-hmm. You know, on these jobs. And, you know, I'm experiencing something, you know, at the moment where there's a job where the team is solid. All about culture, not all about culture, but not too fucking much. You're not, you know, when you go too far.
Yeah, they're not putting on a yoga class every Thursday morning or some shit, because, and that's where people struggle so much. Yeah. So like, I won't derail you. Keep going. Cause I don't want you to forget. So they're all about culture, the good team.
All about culture, good team. And you know, outside when we're in the boardroom, you know, they're pushy, they're this, they're hammering us and stuff like that. But there's an understanding, and it's I don't know how to explain it, but there's a lot to learn off that. Do you know what I mean? How much, there's no superstars as such. Maybe there is. I can't see it. Maybe that's the way I have it done. There's no ego. That's a massive one. On a good team, you need to have a little bit of ego. You can't have too much. And then on the other side, I'm on a job where the morale isn't so good. I can compare the both of them. This job is fucking pumping. This one isn't, financially terms. And that's from what I'm hearing in the media, if it's true or not. But, you know, and I relate it back to the fucking, now, given the fact that this team is after coming from the job back in 2020, and then they went to job in 2023. You know, they moved on. So this team is a well-oiled machine, mm-hmm. whereas this team here has been pulled together. Do you know what I mean? It's all newer guys. So there's a bit of factor. Like, it's hard, you know yourself, when you're busy, like what you're saying, doing your 15 road crossings, you know, and you're starting to pull fucking old Johnny, who started 3 months ago, and you're after promoting him to be a supervisor. And he, you know, you have to give him the youth and all this, and he hasn't a fucking clue what he's doing. You know, you become that team that's Jimmy. What the fuck is going on here?
It's even the truck driver. Yeah, so like we got so busy in truck. There was a day that we had like 400 orders or some 400 available spots on our list for trucks to go to work. Right, you're dying. Like you're snowed under, and the phone, like the you look at it and it's ringing, and you go, 3 years ago I would have kissed you to make this phone call and say I want 10 trucks, and now I don't want you or 20 trucks, and then you're calling in anyone. I'm posting on Instagram, come on, I need trucks, come down, you know, I need operators, and then you're saying, oh, okay, I'll meet you on site tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. with a key and a book, right? Yeah. I hope you can fucking read so that you can fill out the right spots.
Yeah, yeah. Have you got a license?
Can you send me a picture message of it? Yeah. And then, like, you sit there and then, like, So it works sometimes. Like, sometimes the guys that rock up are great, you know, and then other times it just lets you down so fucking hard and you look like such an idiot.
I know.
I can remember that day that the phone, it just seemed like everything clicked, all of the chasing we'd done, you know, and everything else. And then you go, oh, I can't fill your order. I can't fill your order. Like, your orders are no good.
I've been ringing you, begging you for work for the last 3 years. And now I can't do it. Yeah. That sort of shit. Yeah.
Yeah. That happens actually a lot. So I send out sales reps and we chase a client, and then the client rings and they go, right, we want to move tomorrow. And you go, after the rain, when no tips are open, when you've rung your current guy, and you're like, yeah, do you know what? I'm going to give that Starbucks a go. And then they ring up and they're like, can you move it? And you go, no. I'm sorry.
Well, that's the challenges of being too busy, isn't it? You know, I'd rather be as fucked as that is when, you know, you've got 100 fucking machines out and you need 150, you know, and you're going to let someone down.
Yeah.
It's a better problem than.
Yeah, having 50 in the yard and going, I'm so, like, I feel poor. Like, it's not just a number on a piece of paper anymore. Like, it's in my soul. Yeah.
The two different sets of challenges, but one is definitely a little bit better, you know.
Yeah. Now, last week, we're running on a little bit, but I give over the microphone in the last 5 minutes for someone. I'm sure you've heard it at the end. Whatever you want to say, was there any thoughts that you came down here today thinking – I'd like to say this in front of a microphone.
I never actually listened to the end of one of your podcasts, so I didn't
you
know.
You haven't made it to the end. Nah. Every time I ask people for if they have any thoughts, because some people are like, oh, actually, do you know who I had on? I had Jim's Mowing on, and he sat down and I said, do you have anything to say in the last 5 minutes? And he goes, yeah, I've actually dedicated my life's work now to investigating how to save civilization from Armageddon.
Right. Fuck, I don't have anything like that to say. I was just going to say, thank you.
Well, I sat down and I looked at it and I went, I don't know if we can unpack that in 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, man, I just wanted to come down here and, you know, I'm trying to get my, you know, ever since I've had a couple of changes in the last 6 months in my business and I'm getting back out there, you know, I lost that little bit of hunger. I feel like it's coming back, trying to drive a little bit, doing a bit more. Like, I think this stuff was great, Jimmy. I think with the likes of you guys going out and, you know, back in the day when I grew up doing this civil in this game, it was always fucking old cunts, fucking cranky old fuckers. Don't talk about anything. Don't say anything. Shut the fuck up. Blah, blah, blah. Don't show any emotion. Don't show any excitement. Don't show. Just get into the fucking thing and do your job and go home.
Yep.
And I think it's great to see we're making a bit of, I don't know, making our game a little bit more sexier than it is. Like sharing some of the stories, sharing some of the insights. Like, of all the stuff, I don't know if we've talked, I can't remember what we've talked about for the last hour, but there's so many positives. Do you know what I mean? I live for this shit. You know, that joy of winning a fucking job and even this joy of going into, like, I'm crisscrossing the fucking the East Coast of Australia like a fucking politician in election time trying to win work at the moment, you know? And, you know, it's frustrating and it's, and you know, I'm going to South Australia tomorrow and I was in Queensland last week and if one of them kicks,
hell yeah,
you know, it's a I'm back moment.
Do you know I've got, like, I reckon I've got five big irons in the fire as well. Five.
Yeah, nice.
Right?
Yeah.
If one of them just won't, give me one of them and I'm gonna be on. But then if I get that one, after 1 week, I'm going to be like, I need another one.
Yeah, no, just give me two. Just give just me two. Yeah.
I'll be happy if I'm at two. Yeah. But I think that, you know, I grew up working probably the same, you know, like the old concrete of throwing mud at you, screaming at you, you know, because I can remember I was sitting in the flogging rain, like absolute flogging rain. I had a wetsuit that I used to wear underneath my clothes because it was so, like, there was no roof on the machine as I'm driving it. And then I said to the guy, I want to go get some smoko because I'm fucking cold, yeah? Like I'm wearing gloves driving this digger. I said, I'm fucking cold. He goes, that's what's wrong with you fucking young people. And I'm like, it's 3 degrees. Like I've been sitting in the rain in a fucking wetsuit digging your trenches, you asshole. And I wanted to go get a pie. I'm not telling him I want to go home. I'm just saying like it's 9:30. I'd like to eat something because whatever. And I think that that's – you well, I don't want that for my industry. I don't want to be that guy. I think that guy, you know, like that guy doesn't have a space in this day and age, I hope. But I know that they're still out there too. But, you know, if I can help one person on talking about this stuff to you or one person listen there, put a fire in their belly or, you know.
Yeah, someone that's thinking about going out there and wants to have a crack and, you know, same like my way nowadays. I know we're kind of probably going over here, but my way of doing business is based off relationships. I was afraid of my life coming down here that you were going to start talking about engines of fucking excavators and BCMs and stuff like that. I'm green. I struggle to read fucking drawings. I could be reading a drawing and someone come in and say that's upside down. You know, like, and I'd be like, it wouldn't have mattered anyway because I can't see what I'm doing. You know, but so I don't have any technical ability when it comes to. To all that bullshit, but I have team members who are solid there. I'm just relationships, and that doesn't just go to the client.
No,
that relationship is based across the security board. Guard driving onto the fucking site. Do you know what I mean? Treat them all the same. And I'm not talking shit here. This is genuine. Treat everyone the same. It's not something that you can kind of put on.
No,
there's kind of a genuine interest.
Yeah, but it means that people who are working for you trust you that you're going to get it done. It means the people that you're working with or for or your clients trust you as well because you know.
And if it does fuck up, you're going to answer the phone and go here. Listen, you know.
Oh well, done. No, I appreciated that. Give it.
Legend, Jim.
I'll move this out. Like, see, I've got the good side.
Do the Trump on it.
All right. Colin from Kono Services.
Thank you, James, from Starbuck.
No problem. Like, subscribe, share, put on your stories. I like them when you share them so that we can, you know, the more people we have out there. Fuck, I screwed that part up. But the more people we have out there sharing them, the better the guests we get. So, done. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim.
That's it.